Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. It's been 9 months since Ted Carter took over as president of Ohio State University. And so far, OSU has hired a new athletic director, had a record number of students apply to come to school, started developing a long-term strategic plan for the university, and seen protesters arrested on campus. It's a lot of news in a short amount of time, which is why President Carter joins us today to talk football, fall, and the future of Ohio State. President Carter, welcome back to All Sides.
Anna, it's good to be with you. It's been a while since we last talked in January of this year.
Yeah, we were both sort of new to our jobs then.
Yeah, and excited for a new fall, ready to happen.
It's been a busy start to the academic year at Ohio State. You even helped on move-in day. So how is the first week of classes going?
Really exciting. Obviously, the campus is abuzz. I've had a chance to engage with a couple students even just recently this past weekend and asked them how their classes are going. They're really excited. There's just a lot of energy on campus right now. And it was really fun to help some students and parents move into the dorms.
Yeah, our own building has been thumping with some of the back-to-school parties lately.
That happens.
This freshman class is poised to be the largest in school history, more than 9,000 students on the Columbus campus. The final numbers don't come out until mid-September, so I can't say definitively that is the largest, but how on earth, in a time when enrollment is down, did we get 80,000 applications for the fall semester?
Well, I'd say it has a lot to do with the reputation of Ohio State. I also believe that as people are making decisions that are based on things like affordability, that Ohio State is an incredible value, a big return on investment. As you pointed out, we had 80,000 applications for this incoming undergraduate freshman class. That's a record. 40,000 were out of state, 40,000 in state. We had to make up for some room that we had graduated a lot of students in the last 2 years. So we were able to take, we knew we'd be able to take a slightly larger class. But this was probably the thing that we noticed over the summer. We normally see about a 10% or so, what we call melt from students that say, yes, I'm coming. Some even put some money down on a deposit for a dorm room and still choose to go somewhere else. That's kind of a trend in higher ed. That didn't happen this summer. We didn't see the melt. So that's when we knew we had a lot of students coming. And Dr. Melissa Shivers and our student life team did a remarkable job of being prepared for this, planning for it, making sure that we had the dorms configured to handle this incoming freshman class. We did offer to some number of sophomores the opportunity to live somewhere else if they chose to, and some did take us up on that. So we were able to handle the incoming class. The move-in day, which is just an amazing period of time. I mean, over the course of about 4 days, we moved 17,000 students onto the campus. 17,000. As I joked about with the staff, in my world, that's three aircraft carriers worth. And they do it so well organized. My wife and I went out to be just a small part of it. I was really curious just to see the logistics of it. And I was so impressed. And I did not run into one person that didn't say it was exceptional. Parents were a little surprised on occasion to see, that's the president. He's here moving a bin with us. But that was really exciting. And, it just brings that energy to the campus. It brings it to life.
Has Ohio State had to adjust its admission standards at all? Because, I mean, you think 80,000 applications and 9,000 freshmen. I mean, that's starting to sound more exclusive than the university's been in the past.
So it's always a great question. And when I spoke about the state of the university last year, I talked about our land-grant mission and how I believe we have a purpose to serve all Ohioans. So a couple of good points to make here. Like most major public and private universities, we did not require SAT or ACT scores. So that is always the first question. Are you diluting the talent base that's coming in if you're not using that as a metric? Of course, we have grades from high school, class ranks. And to me, everything we looked at tells us that this class is as talented, if not more talented, than classes we've seen in the past. We also keep to the formula that we want to have about 70%, and we're a little over 70% of all of our students on campus are from the great state of Ohio, all 88 counties, and then roughly 28% are from out of state or international. We kept that formula even for this incoming freshman class. Now, of course, we see transfers that come from our regional campuses. But to get to your point about, are we being more selective? Is it harder to get in? It is pretty hard to get into the Columbus campus. But as you've talked about with me, our enrollment at our regional campuses is wide open for any student that's in good academic standing. And I'm proud to report that our regional campuses also are up, which is a first in a long time. And that's a really good indication that we are really, you know, attractive to everybody. And of course, the price point to go to a regional campus is better than coming to Columbus campus. And after 1 year, you can automatically transfer to the Columbus campus with your credits intact.
The Board of Trustees has approved a 3% increase in undergraduate tuition for this year's freshman class. Ohio law limits it to 3%. Was that the right call? It's always difficult raising the cost of going to school.
Yeah, I'm somebody that's a fiscal conservative, and I also believe in keeping affordability at the, you know, the best that we can. I wrestled with the tuition rate increase, to be quite frank, and when we looked across the board in the numbers and the fact that that 3% is frozen for everybody that starts as a freshman, so basically it's a 0.75% tuition rate increase on a four-year attendance. And we're also in line with all of our other public universities across the state. But it's something we're going to continue to review as we go forward. I want to keep the cost of attending, and I know it's more than just tuition when you come to our campus. I want to keep it as low as possible. Now, even say with all that said, we are arguably one of the best value for our campus within the Big Ten. We're right in the middle of the pack, and now we're 18 schools. And if you look across the state of Ohio, we are the one of the lowest cost points of any of the public universities. So I'm very proud of where we are in terms of our affordability.
I want to talk a little bit about the FAFSA, the Federal Financial Aid Program, because it did not go the way that anybody wanted it to go this year. How did you guys navigate all that confusion and delay?
Well, we tried to do everything to support the students that were in that space. And I'll first of all just agree with you. Clunky is a word I've heard used for how it was rolled out. It really hurt a lot of schools across the nation. And we won't know for a couple more weeks, maybe a couple months, how much enrollment dropped nationwide for those that are at the lower income, underserved areas of the country. But there's no doubt it had an impact. We anticipated it before it actually got to how bad it was. We delayed all of our requirements for when you had to get your paperwork in as much as a month. And we staffed ourselves up to help people with applications. And I think, won't have the final analysis, I think when we look at why we were over roughly 9,000 students, when we see the exact number, I think how we handled the FAFSA issue will be one of the reasons that we had a large incoming freshman class.
Maybe why you have regional campus uptick as well?
Possibly. And I don't want to jump on that one just yet, but we're going to get to those analytics because we need to know. I mean, we've started the process for next year's incoming freshman class already.
You've also been making some major hires since you started as president. In January, you named Ross Bjork to replace Ohio State's longtime athletic director, Gene Smith. How is Bjork settling in?
Ross is doing a great job. Anybody that follows Buckeye athletics or college athletics knows, this is a dynamic time. The landscape is changing very, very quickly. Ross had the opportunity to work with Gene for a number of months before he took over on 1 July. So from my perspective, it couldn't have worked out better. I mean, he got to really learn from the master, Gene, and by 1 July, he was ready to go. And of course, we're on the, you know, right on the doorstep of starting football season. So Ross has been great. He's integrated well with his other athletic directors. Ross is the head of all of the athletic directors at a national level. So he fills a really important role. And of all the athletic directors I've interacted with, not only in the Big Ten, but across the nation, Ross understands the dynamic landscape that we're going into. So he's going to be a great leader for our 36 Division I sports teams.
You're also searching for a new provost, and you've called this your most important hire. Why has this been such a challenging position to fill? What are you really hoping to get from a candidate?
Yeah, we're still in the final stages, and I've said this a couple times, and I'll say it again. We're close, and I'm excited that the patience that we have shown in bringing the right person, I think, will pay off for us, and that just speaks to how important this position is. We've had great interest in it, but we are one of the most complex, large campuses with our 15 colleges, and it is a lot to take in. So we're close, as I said. We're going to get there, and I'm looking forward to making an announcement here, maybe here with you in the future.
You're welcome to do it right now if you've got somebody in mind.
I'm not there yet.
And for those who don't know, quickly, what is a provost? What do they do?
Yeah, the provost is really the person in charge of academic affairs. You know, you can imagine with the 15 colleges, you have 15 deans. So this is a person that is the leader of those deans, oversees a significant portion of our budget, oversees all of, you know, what it takes for our students to be successful, and then is in charge through those deans of 8,500 faculty, which is one of the largest faculty groups in the country. So it's a big enterprise.
It's a big job.
Yeah, it's a big job. And, you know, I'm very honest and I'm very open about this. You know, coming in here, not classically trained academician, as many university presidents are, I do not have a PhD. I've been in the teaching and learning space most all my life. I need somebody that complements my resume. And I want the faculty to be somebody that looks up to that provost as their leader as well. But I also need somebody that can be a follower, because my vision, along with the rest of our president's cabinet and our board of trustees, is how we're going to create this upward trajectory for Ohio State. So this person has to be a leader and something of a follower and a team player across the cabinet.
It kind of sounds like you're hiring a vice presidential candidate. It sounds like the way presidential candidates talk about their VP picks.
In some ways, it's that's not too far off, yeah.
Yeah, you want somebody that compliments you, maybe shores up places where you have less experience, but you get along with, like, it. I don't know, just because we've gone through the VP pick over the summer, I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking, that sounds like a VP candidate.
Yeah, there's similar vetting and all that goes with it, yes.
Will you have a similarly large rollout with a big event? No.
We haven't imagined what that will look like, but there will definitely, when we're ready and announce it, it'll be a very formal process by how we introduce this person.
The university is also rolling out a new civics program called Listen, Learn, Discuss. What is this?
Well, it's really an extension of some programs that we had started years ago. But I knew, even after we interviewed in January of this year, that we needed to have more dialogue with our students and some of our student group leaders. You know, these are voluntary programs, so they're not mandatory, but I wanted a different program that was developed by our faculty, by our staff, and maybe most importantly, by our own students. And so we created this over the summer. We have formally rolled it out, and I can tell you there's, again, a lot of buzz on campus. It's really popular. A lot of students are taking it. And, you know, it's a program that is not designed to tell students what to think. It's not even necessarily a program that tells students exactly how to think. It's really about how you engage in a conversation when you know you may or may not disagree or agree with somebody, but also know that it's okay to disagree and what it means to have a, you know, the type of conversation where you can still learn something from somebody and after having that conversation, disagree, but maybe disagree a little bit better.
How to make those conversations more constructive.
Yes.
That was President Ted Carter of The Ohio State University. Coming up, proposed changes to NIL, Ryan Day's incentive pay, and a new strategic plan. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from The Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour with Ohio State University President Ted Carter. And fall means more than the return of students to campus. It's the return of Buckeye football. For the very first time, we're going to have a proper college playoff. 12 teams will get to compete in a postseason for a spot in the national championship game. Are you excited about this change? I am.
I am very excited, and I'm glad you outlined it the way you did because, you know, whether you've been a Buckeye fan all your life or you're relatively new or a new student on campus, this year in college football, we will not be like any college football season we've ever had in our nation's history. So that's how different this is.
Yeah, one of the things that's always been frustrating to me as a Buckeye fan is that the national championship games were chosen. And so there would be this preference, perhaps in the eye of some versus others, that undefeated teams, teams with great seasons, wouldn't get into that championship because they wouldn't get scored high enough.
Yeah, there'll be this is going to be a combination towards the tail end. I mean, obviously, winning your conference championship will matter.
Oh, yeah.
But then with 12 teams in there, first of all, you're going to have a group of five team in there. So that's new. And you're going to have, you know, multiple games, which extends the season, which is a challenge. So as I look at it, this is not just college football as we know it. This is a little bit of the taste of March Madness at the end, and then a little bit of what would be required to win the Stanley Cup in ice hockey, because I think the team that is going to be not just the most talented but the healthiest at the end of the season has got the best chance to win. And then you throw in with the Big Ten and how we're organized, there's a chance that you could meet the same team more than once in this format, as many as three times potentially. So that's an interesting dynamic.
Football coach Ryan Day's contract has also changed. He's going to get bonuses for getting into the playoffs. They kind of tier all the way up, and he'll get a whopping $1 million if he brings us a national championship. Why make the change to Day's contract?
Well, you know, first of all, when he came in and he had his original contract, this college football playoff thing hadn't been imagined. So we had to go through and look, you know, again, along with his agent and the negotiations that go with this.
He has an agent?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
All football coaches do.
I didn't know that.
And this is what the market is bringing. And we want to make sure that we have the right incentives there to go after the biggest tickets. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, just how proud I am of Coach Day. I've gotten to know him very well over the summer, and I'm just really proud he's our football coach.
One of the bonuses that Day gets that I thought was particularly interesting is he gets $50,000 if the grade point average of the team is a 3.0, or $100,000 if it's 3.3, and then $150,000 for a 3.5. So there's academic bonuses in there too.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the academic prowess that our football team has shown. Their average over the last 2 years has been a 3.2. So you can figure out where that fits in that bonus structure. And, you know, Coach Day cares a great deal about how our football players perform in the classroom. And I think that's something that, you know, all of us should be proud of.
Ryan Day's overall record since becoming head coach is 53-8. So definitely a respectable record, but three of those losses are to that team up north. What happens if we lose to Michigan again?
Well, first of all, I'd like to sit here and tell you that's not going to happen.
I would like you to sit here and tell me that's not going to happen.
But I don't make guarantees. And, you know, I leave the coaching to our football coach. And I know Ryan's got great game plans for every team that we're going to play. And all I would say is have faith in our team this year. They've really worked hard in the offseason. He's brought in great coaches. The recruiting has been outstanding. And I know we're going to be competitive in every single game this year, all the way to the end. So it's going to be an exciting year to watch. You know, predictions on what happens in the heat of battle, the heat of a game, you know, it'd be silly for me to sit here and make those kind of comments. But I would just say I have great, great faith in Coach Day and our entire coaching staff.
In a new Netflix documentary, former Michigan football staffer Connor Stallions denies the NCAA allegations that he had an illicit in-person scouting operation, but his attorney also alleges that Ohio State had a role in illegally obtaining his client's personal information. I guess first, have you seen the documentary? And then second, do you have any kind of response?
So I haven't seen the documentary, and I'll be very upfront here with your listeners. I don't intend to watch the documentary. And yes, I've followed all of this story just like everybody else. I've seen nothing, absolutely nothing, that goes even show an iota of accuracy in some of these conspiracy theories about where Ohio State might have been involved. And, you know, quite frankly, I'm a little bit over it. I'm not looking to re-adjudicate anything in the past. There are others that will do that, and they probably need to do that. But I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to us taking on the Akron Zips this weekend, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Before we move on to topics other than football, two state lawmakers just came out with a proposal to change our law that lets athletes make money off their name, image, and likenesses. Their proposal would allow student athletes to work more directly with NIL collectives. And in case you don't know, those are nonprofits affiliated with schools that raise money to pay athletes for brand deals or appearances. So would that be a good change?
So the name, image, likeness landscape has been really pretty crazy looking backwards. You know, most states like Ohio have put some legislation in place to help student athletes obtain the ability to negotiate with third parties. I'm just very appreciative of our lawmakers looking out for our student athletes. I know they're trying to do some good things, make us competitive in the market with other states, particularly, you know, states that are in the Southeastern Conference. We have had some initial conversation, but we haven't officially engaged with the language that's in this proposed law.
And it's very new.
Yeah, and I look forward to it. I have been following it very closely. And again, I'm just thankful that our lawmakers are looking out for our student athletes.
Yeah, the bill also clarifies that athletes can have an agent or a lawyer look over their contracts.
Right.
You would think that would be logical, but I guess putting it out in black and white is not a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's not. And, you know, this isn't just, you know, for our athletes at Ohio State. This is for athletes at Cincinnati, Ohio University. You know, this is for everybody that's in this particular space, and they're competitive in all their leagues.
So let's move on to this spring, your first semester as president of Ohio State University. There were multiple days of protests that reflected a nationwide student movement in response to the Israel-Hamas war. And it culminated here on April 25th with dozens of arrests. So nearly 40 individuals were arrested during three separate demonstrations on campus. About half of them were affiliated with the university. What did you learn from those protests? Like, what are you taking into this fall semester, particularly as we get close to this election?
Yeah, well, we know that this is an emotional time. I knew it was when I got here, and I started on 1 January and actually met with some of these student groups. You know, we have rules that keep our campus safe. We articulate them over and over and over. Whenever a group wants to have an event that would be a protest, they sign up with us. We give them those rules. We talk about, you know, what they're able to do. We want them to be able to express themselves and use their First Amendment rights, and we've been very clear about that. And as you point out, yes, there were some arrests made on April 25th, and I'm not happy that we had to do that. I want students to have their First Amendment rights exercised. I believe in the First Amendment. I'm somebody that wore the uniform of the Navy for 38 years. I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, of which the First Amendment is very much a part. So I feel very strongly about that. And sometimes that gets lost in this piece. But we, and I as the president, also have a responsibility to the safety and well-being of the campus. We have a mission. And it's the same mission that we adopted in this slogan in 1938 called Education for Citizenship. But we also have to do clinical care, research, and allow people to move freely around the Oval and through the campus. So, and I also have a responsibility to keep our students safe. And that's one of the reasons that we don't allow encampments overnight. We have a very, very well-seasoned and good-sized security team, our Ohio State University Police Department. We've actually made more hires, and we've done other things to make the campus more safe. But if somebody were to camp overnight, as they did on many other Big Ten campuses and other large public and private universities across the country, you know, we saw the results of some of that, you know, as we're trying to look back and analyze that. And it's interesting, even in California, former president here at Ohio State, Michael Drake, has come out and said, absolutely no encampments going into the fall. And I think that was a lesson learned from USC and UCLA, where they actually had violence against students that were encamped, and that didn't end very well. So we didn't get to that point, is where I'm going on this. Yes, that day on April 25th, after hours and hours and hours of warning our students and whoever else was there from not Ohio State that at some point they were going to have to break up those tents, and it was clear that there was some small group that wasn't going to do that, that's when we had to physically remove them. And that's unfortunate. Now, I'll also point out that we were host to well over 30 protests that happened in the spring, and multiple ones that happened even after that event, one of which had over 650 protests with no arrests whatsoever. So I guess my point is there was some learning going on that when we said, hey, it's time to go home, you've had your opportunity to express yourself, that eventually started happening. And as we go into the fall, we've gone and looked at our space rules and done a good analysis of it. They haven't really changed that much at all. And we're making sure that our students and our student leadership groups know what the rules are. So let me make one other final point. We want students to know that they have a voice and their voice can be heard. There's a lot for people to want to get out and make their voices heard. Obviously, we have an election year, so we know there'll be some of that as well. But your voice doesn't mean that you get to incite violence or propose violence against another group, particularly a group that's on campus itself. I've been very clear in my welcoming videos to say, hey, you know, we're all Buckeyes here. We all chose to come here to either be educated, do research, do clinical care, be educated. There's one thing that binds us together. And the last thing I want to see is Buckeyes protesting against another Buckeye because they don't believe in them or where their background is or just disagrees with some stance they have. That's something that we, again, the listen, learn, discuss concept was built on. So we know we're going to probably see some protest groups this fall, and I'm hoping that we can do it with, again, a good bit of civil obedience.
You've also recently updated your policies on protests. So what kind of changes have you been made?
Well, again, we reinforce that there'll be no encampments. We've been very clear that, you know, we're not going to allow people to go in and try to occupy buildings. Anything that would impede our mission to allow people to get back and forth to places where they want to be educated, do their research, I think all those things are really important. So there are really no other big changes. Now, we have increased some patrols. We have increased some of our cameras and how we do that work. License plate readers. So again, these are things that are not really necessarily have anything to do with protests, just keeping the campus safe.
Yeah, that actually was going to be my next question about campus safety, because you've made an effort to increase campus safety. Ohio State, for those who don't know, has its own police force. So it's not like Columbus. You can get support for Columbus police, but the first responders are Ohio State police officers. You have 75. You have more than 5,000 cameras on campus. What's the balance between safety and privacy?
Well, I think that's important that people know that there is privacy. We're not looking inside people's rooms or houses or anything. We're just looking at doors to make sure that we know what's happening there. And if something does happen, that we can now hold somebody accountable. So I think that's important. I have been to Blankenship Hall, where we have the kind of the headquarters, and I've seen the cameras there. It's really quite exceptional. It's one of the best networks of campus safety done in a way that is digestible of just about any campus I've seen in the country. And people should know that we have invested in that. As you mentioned, 75 OSU police force folks, again, very well trained, and they know how to handle crowds. So I'm excited about that team. And we have a great relationship with the city of Columbus as well as the state. And that's a real positive for us. Not every state enjoys that. And that's important because just as we have on College Game Day coming up this Saturday, when we have events that involve, you know, hundreds of people and now maybe potentially 100,000 people for any given Saturday event, people want to know that they're being kept safe.
You're also looking to hire a new chief of police. How is that going?
You know, we're just starting into that. And, you know, we're really excited that we've had such a long time serving chief of police. She's done an amazing job for us. She's been with us for, you know, more than a decade, and she's going back to her home state and back to Clemson. And, you know,
we won't falter for that.
Yeah. but yeah, we're going to do a search for a new police chief, and we've got some great candidates already.
So Ohio State gave everybody a 3.5% raise this year. So thanks for that. WOSU is technically considered employees of Ohio State University. But you also got a $164,000 bonus from the Board of Trustees.
Yeah, I know that got a little bit of attention. And, you know, it's never fun to read about, you know, when somebody gives you a compliment and says you're doing a decent job. But I guess my point I would make on that is, one, I'm humbled that the board has done that, but it's also what's in my contract. So they're required to review me. I have a very discrete number of metrics that I have to meet for the board. They go through that in great detail, and they give me a report back on that. And that happens every year. And the way the contract is set up, it's set up to give me a potential of 30% of my base salary. So that's what it was. And of course, that was prorated for just 6 months. And again, just as we look at all these other you know, executives and sports coaches, there's a market value to what they offer people. And I'm just thankful to the board that they showed faith and supported me.
It's got to be strange, I think, to have what you get paid debated in the public.
It is a little unusual, but I've lived a very public life. People can know what I got paid when I was a captain in the Navy or three-star admiral or what it was when I was the president of Nebraska. So I've been used to that for a long time, and I accept that.
That's Ohio State University President Ted Carter. Coming up, we're going to dive into what's at stake inside the university space. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking with Ohio State University President Ted Carter this hour. And one of the ways OSU has set itself apart in recent decades is through its research. Ohio State is a leading research university, securing millions in federal and private funding to study everything from long COVID to NASA's Deep Space Food Challenge. President Carter, how important are partnerships like the Star Lab to the future of the university?
Well, first of all, it's so exciting that we have leaders here on this campus that help us bring in organizations like NASA and all different types of organizations that help support the International Space Station, what the future of space exploration is, what discovery really is going to mean for our civilization. And as you point out, we had this Deep Space Food Challenge, which I have to admit I didn't know much about until I came here. And we bring in all these entrepreneurial and bright young people that come up with these different ideas for how to make food better used and make it taste good and be usable up in space. And I think we gave $1.5 million in money to those that competed in and won in that competition. And then, of course, you mentioned Star Lab. Again, this idea of research for what the future of space exploration is going to be, because the International Space Station is not going to be with us forever. And I think I just shared with you, and your listeners may not know that I've had a strong connection to the astronaut program. I've never been an astronaut myself.
Never say never.
But many of my colleagues that flew in the Navy And I've had a strong connection with many of them. So Chris Cassidy, who was a Navy SEAL turned astronaut, he and I spoke together when he was on the International Space Station a few years ago. My assistant, when I was running the Naval Academy, became an astronaut, and she was in space just this past year, and I spoke to her multiple times. And then I had a chance to talk to astronaut Sunny Williams, whose name has been quite a bit in the news because she's getting an extension on the International Space Station till February on what was originally planned to be a 10-day trip.
Yeah, there's been a hiccup in bringing them home. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and so I got to talk to her. I've known her. She graduated the Naval Academy just 6 years after I did. I actually was her retirement officer when she retired in 2017. And it was just great to hear her morale. She's looking at it as just like an extended deployment when she was on Navy ships. And, you know, her husband's terrific. And, you know, you can imagine what it would be like to be up there. And again, food is a big part of this. So a lot of people don't know that they have like a replenishment vessel go up there every month that brings them more food and more supplies. So they're going to be fine, but it's a long stretch. As I joked with her, she said, you're going to get to live a whole football season up there in space.
I got to say, yeah, I think a lot of us are familiar with that sort of awful tasting space ice cream. I would hope that we've gotten a lot better at making space food since then.
They have. Their morale is a lot different being up there. But again, it's kind of hard to imagine a space that's much smaller than our control room here, where they sleep in a sleeping bag and anything that they drop now becomes floating object that can endanger them. So it's a different world that they live in up there.
OSU also got $15 million to search for treatments to help people struggling with long COVID. How's that research going?
Well, first of all, it's so necessary. I mean, there's so much about COVID that we still don't know. And we've got, you know, new variants that are out there. And people are still testing positive. I mean, we hear about it every day.
The governor just tested positive
the
other week.
So I think long COVID is something that we still don't really understand. And we can't even understand why people who have had no underlying health conditions, whether they got the shot or not, whether they ever tested positive for COVID or not, have had some sort of change in their health. So this is a study that will start to get after that and help us understand.
Election Day is coming up here in Ohio. You guys are making it a remote learning or a remote work day. What's it like? Why are we going all remote on Election Day?
Well, the most important right that every one of our people on campus have, faculty, staff, students, is the right to vote. And I'm really proud of our university senate that worked this issue from the day I got here. And we went through all of our shared governance to decide that this is a day where we want our students and our faculty and staff to have the opportunity to go vote in person should they go choose. So we'll still have classes. We're just going to do it remotely. So people have more time to make sure they can get out there and get to the polls.
And speaking of politics, public universities are subject to the whims of state legislatures. And this year, lawmakers introduced some landmark legislation that would transform how universities operate. It's unclear whether Senate Bill 83 will actually become law before the end of this General Assembly. But do you still stand by the quote that you had earlier of, let us do the work that we know is right?
Yeah, I've engaged with many of the leaders in the General Assembly. Senator Serino and I have had many, many talks. And I appreciate what it was that they were trying to achieve with Senate Bill 83. What I was trying to say to them is, you know, they'll decide whether or not they want to legislate something. But a lot of the things that were in there, we're already, you know, trying to do. And, you know, we'll continue to work with them. If there's another version of the bill, I mean, we'll be engaged in it right from the get-go.
Ohio also passed a law earlier this year that would ban transgender girls from playing on female sports teams. It's going to apply to college, but it is all tangled up in court right now. Could be tangled up in court for years as these things go. Has Ohio State started planning at all for what you will do if the law goes into effect?
Well, all I'll say on this one is we'll follow the law, whatever's passed. But, you know, we try to be welcoming for everybody in all of our sports programs. And we take care of our student athletes. And, you know, we've got over 1,000 student athletes. We're one of the largest in the country. And I'm proud that we haven't had any issues on this topic, at least not that I'm aware of, and certainly not since I've been here.
When we announced you were going to be on the show, we got a couple of emails, and One of them wanted to know about the career roadmap. So this is the university's plan to ensure its positions are classified properly and that people are being paid competitive salaries. One of the complaints that this email writer had was that they feel like there's no clear path for promotion sometimes because the university hasn't reclassified positions.
So one of the initiatives that has been underway since I got there is looking at not just our faculty and what they're being paid and comparing that to their peers, but also our staff. So we're in the middle of that as I speak, and it's a lot of work to do. This is one of the largest staffs of any institution, any organization I've ever been associated with. And you're right, it is complicated. We want to make sure that we're fair and equitable to everybody for what they get paid. And we want them to feel like we are the employer of choice. Some of the benefits that we offer, particularly in healthcare, are top of as good as anybody in the country. So I know there's some things we do really, really well. And sometimes that has to be weighed in with what base salaries are. But also, you mentioned the 3.5% salary increase. We want to make sure that we're covering for things like an inflation and being competitive in the market. So, yes, I think we still have a little more work to do there. We know there are some gaps in some areas, and we want to make sure we can close them.
That really gets to retention at its heart, right? That you want to be able to retain the best and the brightest here.
It is. And retention is a big deal. You know, it's a competitive workforce and work market out there today, and we recognize that.
You've also talked about creating a long-term plan for the university. What does that kind of plan look like?
So in my first 6 months, I said I was kind of in the listen and learn mode, and I really was. I've been all over the state. I did a lot of that even this summer. But now I feel like it's important that we articulate what it means to have a vision, turn that into a strategy, and then a long-range plan. And part of that is to decide, first of all, how far out do we want this plan to be included? Now, most people would tell you, you can't really imagine what's going to happen more than about 2 years out in front of you. And that, to some degree, is true. But I want to create a plan that will look out even to the 10-year point. And it isn't that I can tell what's going to happen 10 years from now, but I want to create a trajectory of positivity and improvement that will be so well-defined that that curve will already be in place 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now. And of course, we're going to do them underneath the pillars of the things that is part of our mission. Again, academics, academic excellence, research, clinical care, clinical research, medical research, the arts, athletics, agriculture. These are really important elements to things that we do at Ohio State. And then again, as we just talked about, being the workforce of choice. And I think we have to be competitive. You know, as I look at where the future of higher ed is going, I actually believe, and it's one of the reasons I came to this university, that the front door of where all academics and all academic research and excellence is going to go through an institution like Ohio State. So this is going to be more than just a plan. There will be some new initiatives in there. And again, this is not something that we're just coming up with out of the office of the president. We're actually going to be going through workshops that will touch just about every influence group that touches Ohio State. We're going to be doing that here over the next couple months. I think I'm going to be in front of about 800 people just over the next 2 weeks, articulating some of these things and taking input for new big ideas. And then we will actually write this and articulate it. It'll be in a document. And I will unveil this in November. And then we will articulate more specific initiatives throughout the course of the year. And then it will go into motion starting on July 1st of this next year.
Oh, wow. So you're really going to get this off the ground relatively quickly.
I am. And I have been thinking about it since I got here. And I'm really excited about this. And I think there'll be a lot of excitement about what we'll be able to create here.
Does any of it include potential construction or expansion of the main campus?
Well, you know,
feels like you guys are always expanding.
I inherited about $5 billion worth of construction across all of our campuses. I'm probably going to be more concentrated on how we sustain and maintain the 1,300 buildings and structures that Ohio State owns over the course of some of that. So deferred maintenance, of which is a big part of our portfolio, is really important. About half of our buildings are nearing that 40 to 50 year lifespan age, even though a lot of the buildings are designed to last for 60 or 70 years. We've just got to make sure that they're relevant and can operate in the way that they're intended. But there's a price tag that goes with, you know, putting up new buildings.
Yeah. We were talking about building new stadiums the other day on All Sides, and that comes with its own expense. Although I will say the shoe is, what, a little over 100 years old? So
yeah, a little over 100 years. And that's something that we have to maintain. And there's a cost to doing that as well. And something we talk about and think about all the time. We're going to have an outdoor hockey game in March this year, first time ever, which means we're going to winterize the stadium for the first time. And of course, as we were just talking about earlier, that's part of the college football playoff. We could be hosting a game in the shoe at some point in the future in December.
That is a good point. I did want to ask you about graduation last spring. So we had an interesting choice of speaker in Chris Pann. There was a lot of big feelings, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
What was your takeaway from his speech?
Well, I'm first going to acknowledge that there were some people that really liked him, and there were some people that really didn't care for him too much. And, I've said this publicly. I own it. I'm the one that invited him. There is a vetting process. A lot of that was started before I got here, but eventually I was the one that invited him. And, of all the things that could happen in the world, there's a lot worse things that could happen. But, for some people, that was a thing. And all I'm going to say to your listeners is we intend to do much better this next go around with our speakers.
I also wanted to ask about the tragedy that there was a parent who tragically took their own life at the graduation. Are you changing any security protocol in light of that?
Well, we always review our safety protocols, especially when we have football season coming up. That was a horrible tragedy, and I still my heart goes out to that family. Our team did a wonderful job engaging with them on that day. There were some things that we thought we knew, but we couldn't be sure, and that was one of the reasons that we couldn't even articulate at the ceremony as it started, even though, there were some things being reported. It was a really difficult situation, and we've been as clear about it as we could be once we knew what actually happened.
Yeah, in the beginning, and I get that as somebody who covered cops and courts before I got into covering politics, it's sometimes they just don't know exactly what happened or how it happened. Like, was it an accident? Was it on purpose?
Right. No, and I've looked into this personally. I mean, I can just say very confidently that our stadium's very safe. This was a very difficult effort for somebody that decided to take their life, and it's a sad situation. And again, my heart goes out to that family.
I want to end on a little bit of a light note, so I have some fun questions for the end.
Okay.
Outside of the Michigan game, what game are you most looking forward to?
Oh, gosh. There's a lot of games that are going to be really exciting, but I think the one that's going to get the most attention is when we go on the road to Eugene, Oregon, and take on the Ducks. That's probably the one that's got my attention for right now. I think that's going to be an important one for us. First time that we'll go out to the West Coast against a Big Ten opponent. But even hosting Iowa as a game here that's coming up around the corner is one that we don't want to overlook. Iowa's going to bring a great defense here. They always do. So that's going to be an exciting game.
Yeah, I lived in Oregon in 2015 when we played the Ducks for the national championship. Last time we won the national championship.
Yeah.
So, and then I got to go to the Oregon game the other year here where they beat us, which was, it was a good game. It was an exciting game. I think you're right. The Oregon game's going to be great.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for somebody to watch the Michigan game with you in your presidential suite, you know where to find me.
Noted.
Is there anything else that you're looking forward to about fall here in Central Ohio?
I'm looking forward to just the change of seasons. I mean, that's what's so great about living here in the Central Ohio region. The fall is just such a great time of year. It's a season of change. It's also, to me, like the beginning of the year. Even though it's later in the calendar year, it's the beginning of the academic year. So, the excitement of being at Convocation this year, which was way, way more exciting than I thought it would be. We must have had 10,000 people in the shot, and, we kept it relatively short. But the excitement of seeing all of our students there, how attentive they were, just tells me that this is the reason that we're in higher education. It's for this purpose.
That was University President Ted Carter. thank you so much for your time this morning.
Anna, great to be with you. Thank you.
And I also want to say thank you to our All Sides staff, which includes senior producer Marcus Charleston, producer Aaron Esmont Rabinowitz, our intern producers Kira Kadar, David Stein, and Chris Corcoran. And thank you to our board operator this morning, Chris Johnston. And finally, but perhaps most importantly, thank you to all of you listening to 89.7 NPR News.